This is the Tom Likas Show.
He had these big round boobs.
Now, from the New Normal Studios in Burbank.
I have a weakness for big brown boobs.
Tom Likas.
Thank you for tuning into the Tom Likas Show. This is where you hear us live, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 24/7 at tom.show. You can hear us on our free app. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being a part of the program. We appreciate it. Get the free app by going to tomeverywhere.com. That's tomeverywhere.com. All right, here we are, a bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. I'm here in Los Angeles, and we are joined in this bonus hour with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Adam, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here, as always.
Great.
Tom, things are out of control. What can I say? Seriously, Dad, this is like crazy times we're living in. I don't know if you know the story, Tom, but there's a guy who was on a submarine as a crew member in the Navy, and he wanted to show his son and his daughter where he had been living. And so he snapped a couple of pictures of his cabin and then was going to show that to his kids or whatever. But as you might imagine, that's inside a submarine, so that's classified. You're not supposed to be doing stuff like that. And he ended up getting busted, and he got sentenced to like a year in prison for that. Isn't that something? And,
wow.
you know, one of the things that people don't realize, and this is really important, what I want to talk about briefly, is the discretion of the state. It's very, very significant in terms of, you know, there's lots and lots of laws on the books. And, you know, there are always these little things on, like, restaurant placemats that talk about, like, you know, in New Orleans it's illegal to walk on a horse or with a horse down the street on a Sunday. These like stupid laws, and you know, there are a lot of things like that and a lot of laws that are of definitely questionable repute in terms of reality, but they are on the books. And the question of how they get enforced and how prosecutors approach them is very significant. And something that, you know, didn't get a lot of attention, but the other day, the Attorney General, Sessions, I always think of this guy, losing it.
Jeff Sessions?
He's the Attorney General. He actually...
Jeff Sessions.
Yes, thank you. He was on television the other day, and he was saying that they are going to eliminate a lot of this, like, leniency that Obama was showing. And they're going to go for the maximum on everything, and they're going to push, you know, for heavy-duty punishments and minimum punishments and guideline punishments, which means that the discretion of the judge is taken away. So in other words, you know, there's always these cases you hear about where someone did something and you don't know all the mitigating circumstances, and the judge gave them, you know, 2 years or something, and everyone says, oh, my God, that wasn't enough. So they want to create what they call mandatory minimums, where it's not really up to the judge in that sense. You don't have the human touch. The judge essentially has like a graph, a chart. And if the person's done a particular crime, there might be a range. I mean, you might get between 4 years and 8 years, but he has to get at least 4 years. And even if the judge feels like that would be wrong, it's too bad because he has to do it. And this is something that is getting, you know, more and more of a reality in our system, and especially now where you kind of have this more sort of conservative thinking reflected with Sessions, and that sort of filters down from the top down. You know, there's a lot of cases that I do that don't make sense. And I've talked to prosecutors, and they say, I see that this is silly, but it's like it's done. It happened. It's like it's the machine is grinding away. I have a guy who got into a car accident. And the other driver came and started screaming at him, so he didn't know what to do. And so he didn't, like, you know, wait around with this guy acting crazy to, like, you know, trade license and insurance information. The guy was really threatening, and so he jumped in his car and drove away. And he went straight to a police station and made a report about the accident. So that's fair and square. Well, anyway, they charged him with a hit and run. And this is the way that they're thinking now, which is, you know, what's the maximum? What's the maximum? Well, technically, if he was at a car accident, you're supposed to exchange information. If he didn't, he drove away, then that's a hit and run. Now, there needs to be at least one rational person somewhere in the system who says, well, wait a second, we really shouldn't be charging this guy with a hit and run because it wasn't a hit and run. He obviously had a reason. He had some kind of circumstance. You know, people sometimes say that in court. They say, I'll plead guilty with an explanation, which legally is actually not reasonable. That's not actually how it works at all. But the reality is that sometimes, and a lot of times, you know, good people do things. And I always talk about people making mistakes. A lot of times, people didn't really make mistakes. People did things that made sense in the circumstances, like that guy I just mentioned. I mean, it would have been strange for him to stick around with this threatening other driver screaming at him and maybe attacking him. He actually did something rational. He avoided the conflict and drove away, and now he's being charged, like I said, with a hit and run. And I'm talking to the prosecutor, and they're saying to me, yeah, you know, you're right, that's crazy. He shouldn't be charged with a hit and run, but you know what? It's too late. It's already been filed, so we got to go through the motions, you know? So in other words, you got to see it to the bitter end and maybe even have a trial to have a jury acquit him and him spend God knows how much money and blood, sweat, and tears on a legal defense over something that makes no sense. And there doesn't seem to be a process, and in fact, it's getting to be less of a process where these things sort of make sense. Now, in the last News for Guys, Gary told an interesting story from England, and this is something I read about a few days ago, where this student, very smart, going to Oxford, so she's no dummy. I mean, Oxford is a very prestigious university, and she stabbed her boyfriend. I mean, that's really sick. That's twisted. And God forbid it had been the opposite. We all know, I don't even need to mention, if the guy had been the Oxford student who stabbed his girlfriend, I mean, he would have gotten screwed. But we always have sympathy for women. But the bottom line is, she apparently stabbed her boyfriend in a rage of some kind, maybe jealous or who knows. And that's obviously very threatening. That's life-threatening. You can kill someone by stabbing them. And the judge is actually, I mean, things are so crazy now in Europe and so soft that the judge is saying, well, if I give her jail, then that will hurt her academic career, which of course is true. And she deserves to have her academic career harmed. But she's so smart and she's got such good grades that it would be a real shame to hurt her academic career. And so she's going to walk away probably from this stabbing, not serving any jail at all. And we don't seem to have a rationality, as I've said. So we have someone like, you know, Hillary Clinton, who stole, you know, 30,000 classified emails on this server or whatever. She doesn't get punished at all. But this dumb schmuck who took two pictures inside a submarine to show to his kids where he's been living for the past year, he ends up going to jail for, you know, classified, you know, information leaking or whatever. And we've already seen in the past few days, I mean, this is an allegation, but the president supposedly had given some classified details to the Russians, which may have been very damaging. But somehow that's reasonable for the president to do. He can reclassify information or something like that, which is like really bizarre. But then again, you see that on the lower rungs, depending on who you are. Now, one of the great, brilliant innovations of our society and the whole principle of it all is the rule of law, where there was no divine right, there was no king, there was no gentry, there was no, you know, upper class that controlled everything that also could control the law. So even if you have people that are very rich or very poor, theoretically they're supposed to be the same in the eyes of the law. Now, you know that rich people can get better lawyers, obviously, and maybe poor people can't get lawyers at all. But objectively speaking, it's very disturbing that we have these kind of Western societies where a woman stabs her boyfriend and gets away with it because she's smart. When we've seen all these examples of teachers, for example, there's even one this week. I mean, it's not even notable anymore, but I just read one where the teacher had sex with two of her students. And, you know, all this drama about, oh, the poor thing, she's obviously mentally ill and she needs help. She's not going to spend a minute in jail for doing that. And then we see that on the other hand, obviously, there are those who end up doing really minor things or even things that are rational, like my guy, who drove away from someone screaming and cursing at him after an accident, and he's being charged with a hit and run. He could serve a year in jail for that. And the problem is that this is becoming more and more common, and it creates an element, I think, very damaging and dangerous in our society where people don't respect law, where people say, and people say it to me all the time, you know, I don't expect to be treated fairly. It's all BS. You know, it's nonsense. It's who knows the judge and who knows the inside track and people that understand the system and blah, blah. And we definitely have created systems where, you know, people are treated very differently. And that's a tragedy. And when you talk about, you know, who it is, it's kind of strange to even talk about that, because I think that white people a lot of times who are, you know, feel that they get discriminated against. Men certainly are starting to say that they feel discriminated against because, you know, women get favor, as you see in the criminal court and certainly in family court. That's like obvious. I mean, is anyone who can really say with a straight face that men are treated the same in family court as women is just being dishonest. It's just there's no way you could really believe that. And you know, then you have the other side of it where minority people, they also feel, fascinatingly, that they are being discriminated against. And, you know, there's been a lot of things to try to help minorities and to be more fair to minorities. And at the same time, you know, they have been historically discriminated against. That's certainly true. And they still feel it now. And, I mean, I've talked to so many people, and this has got to be something that's happened in the recent history in the past 5 years or something, where people will actually say to me, tragically, you know, I think I want to hire you, but I don't know if it's going to make a difference because I'm just going to get screwed. And it's sort of like their expectation is that they're not going to be treated fairly. And no matter what they do, even if they hire an attorney, even someone knows what they're doing, like, you know, myself, and goes in and makes a big effort for them, they still don't feel that it's going to work out, that the system is inherently biased. And that's terrible. It's unbelievable that people, just as a general concept, feel that way. And it's so sad because, you know, the United States was designed not to be that way. There had been so much in our past human history, in Europe and so forth, and the past where people came from these oppressive countries and they came to the United States because they wanted to have this new place that, you know, wasn't going to do those things. It was going to be fair and was going to give everyone an opportunity and try to be reasonable. You couldn't guarantee outcomes because that doesn't make sense. You don't know who's going to be very successful and who's not, but you at least had the equality of the starting point and the opportunity and the possibilities. And it's so sad when you hear people that have become so dark, where, you know, your average person says, you know, it's bullshit. What's the point? You know, why should I bother? Why should I hire a lawyer? I'm going to lose anyway. Why should I vote? My vote doesn't count. I mean, it's really, really harsh. You know that even today, in the context, for example, of marijuana laws, you know, this has been made legal in several states and certainly with prescriptions in other states like California, but you still have the federal government. And the federal government hasn't changed at all. It's as illegal as it always was. And so, again, with this Sessions as the Attorney General, it's very possible, and it seems to be the trend, that they are going to start cracking down. And, you know, it's really wild. In a marijuana store, everything has to be cash because they're not allowed to use the banking system. I mean, I don't know, something changed because a few years ago I remember that they were taking credit cards or whatever, but I think that there was some kind of shift, and the federal government, which controls the monetary, you know, circumstances at the Federal Reserve and banks and so forth, just said, look, we're not going to have this. We don't want you paying PayPal. We don't want you using Visa. We're not going to do this at all. And so you've seen how this business has shifted. And in fact, I went to recently to my doctor to get my marijuana card updated. You have to go every year to get it updated. And I remember paying this guy with a Visa, and now all of a sudden, no way, only cash. And that wasn't even the marijuana store. That's the doctor. So, I mean, things have gone have gone off the cliff, and I don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, in terms of, you know, my experience, and I've said this before, you know, people that come to court, you know, that don't have a lawyer end up really getting harmed. And they end up with public defenders that don't care. They end up going into a system that they don't understand. It's really complex, and there are a lot of things that you're just not going to do properly if you don't have a lawyer, and I can't, you know, belabor that point. But the reality is that when people start talking about the game, I think that's where it comes from, where they're saying the game is rigged in the first place. And this is something that's being repeated a lot. And, you know, I don't know if I want to hate the president for doing this because I'm hearing it on both sides, you know, where they talk about fake news and fake information and disinformation and this whole idea that, you know, you're hearing things, but they're being manipulated. And, you know, there used to be, you know, authoritative sources, really authoritative, like Walter Cronkite, which was the CBS News in the glory days, or the New York Times, or the paper of record, or the Washington Post, or whatever. And now, you know, people are saying, well, the New York Times, that's all nonsense. And, you know, I remember when CNN started. CNN was, you know, the 24-hour news, cable news. This was like an absolute shock, and people weren't even sure, you know, if that would catch on or would anyone even watch it. And it was considered respected and authoritative, and now it's become a joke. It's like, you know, it's all lies and it's all nonsense and it's disinformation, and CNN is the Clinton News Network or whatever. I mean, it's just very, very strange that when people start getting further and further into this abyss, then, you know, you don't know what's true anymore and you don't know what's fair anymore. And if you really don't believe in the legal system, then you're in a society that's collapsing. It's very, very harsh when I talk to people and they say to me, what should I do? You know, something got stolen. I say, well, you should probably, you know, report it to the police. And they say, oh, that's a joke. What's the point of that? And the truth is that the police don't follow up on a lot of things because they're absolutely overwhelmed with reports. So, I mean, if someone stole your bicycle or your laptop or something stupid, you know, if you make a police report, the idea that the police are really going to, like, you know, track it down and help you find it or whatever, or find the guy who took it, not very likely. I mean, they're just not equipped to that. And if they only solve half of murders and only like 10% of rapes, then you have to figure that there's a lot of crime out there going on, a whole lot of crime going on that's not being addressed at all. And, you know, this is really, when you look at some of the societies, like where, like, for example, in Italy, where you had the mafia controlling Sicily or whatever, one of the reasons was is that these organized crime groups took control in a sense that if you needed justice, if you had a business dispute or if someone raped your sister or something, this would be handled by these groups. And they would either, like, kill the person or beat them up, or they'd bring them in and you'd have, like, a conference and, you know, pay amends or whatever. And I've been reading that a lot of societies in the West, even in subcultures, this is reemerging. So in other words, in parts of Germany or parts of England now, they have these Muslim councils. And if there's a dispute or even a divorce or a business dispute or even some kind of criminal things, you don't go to the regular police. You go to this Sharia court and you bring your grievance and this person kind of resolves it like a judge. And then the two of you are supposed to work it out and one pays reparations to the other or whatever it is. And that this is the way things are happening now. And it's a huge indication, a tremendous indication, that society is collapsing. It really is. It's shocking. And, you know, on some level, it's going to have to merge into something else. You know, one of the reasons that we talk about Likas 101, I think it's so important, you know, in general, is because, you know, like some of the callers today were saying, like, you know, you can't get married anymore. You can't live the conventional lifestyle anymore because it doesn't work. And one of the ways that it doesn't work is the legal system. I mean, the reality is as a guy, if you, you know, and this is criminal law, if you, you know, are accused falsely by your wife or your girlfriend of hitting her or abusing the kids or whatever, you know, there isn't this huge investigation. It's assumed that you're wrong. It's assumed that you're guilty. You're taken out of your house. Your kids are taken away from you. You lose everything. And maybe a year later, the charges are dropped, maybe because you were innocent. But by then, it doesn't even matter. The damage has been long accomplished and done to you. And that was part of the purpose of it. And guys always are amazed. They tell me that they can't believe that the legal system was complicit and helped the wife with her lies. And I have seen many, many times, I'm really sorry to say, where I've talked to the other side, which was the wife's lawyer or the prosecutor representing the wife, you know, her complaint or whatever, or even the judges and so forth, the mediators, and they know that she's lying. That kills me. That absolutely blows my mind. When I get into that conversation, I say, you know, her story doesn't even make sense. And they'll say, you know, I think that's going to be a big breakthrough, you know. And they kind of shrug and they say, you know, I think you're right. I've read it also, and I don't think it makes sense. But what the hell are we going to do? And that's the conversation. What the hell are you going to do? It's come this far. You can't back off now. You know, it's a terrible concept that they're trying to make laws about this now in California specifically. There's been a couple of examples. There was a particular prosecutor in Kern County, in Bakersfield, who had certain information that exonerated the defendant. So this prosecutor knew that the guy was innocent, but he withheld the information. And that's called Brady material. And he had no right to do that. He had to have handed it over and shared it with both sides. But he knew that if he did, that would blow the whole prosecution, which makes you ask yourself, does he care about justice at all? In other words, he wanted the conviction so badly, and it gives him credit or whatever, and it was so late in the game for him to back down that he couldn't consider the possibility that he was doing something wrong, that fundamentally the person that he had found guilty and prosecuted was innocent. Now, I mean, there are cases when you don't know what to think and the guy swears he's innocent, you think he's guilty. But here, the prosecutor, it's fair to say, knew that the guy was innocent and he didn't care. And that just blows my mind. That just devastates my thinking. As crazy as it is when you go in, I mean, it's very hard to say. And, you know, you sit there and look at a case now like, for example, O.J. Simpson, and you know that there was a tremendous injustice because he was, you know, certainly guilty and he was found not guilty. But it's very, very heavy when you think about the people involved. And I'm not talking about the defense. I'm talking about the state, the prosecution that knew that the guy was innocent and withheld documents that could have shown that he was. And this is unbelievable. I've been working on a case lately. I try to do some appeals work, and I was trying to help this guy. His name is Daniel Holzclaw, and he was a police officer in Oklahoma. And they got very, very down on him. It's very hard to understand why. But these prosecutors got into this big thing where they sort of had one thing, and it was a possibility, and then they started looking for more people, and they ended up building a very complicated case against him, very witch huntish, very strange, very much against the information and the logic of what would have happened, and a lot of the evidence doesn't fit and doesn't make sense. And there have been some specials on TV about it and so forth. But anyway, he was convicted of a lot of the charges that he was charged with. He was obviously, you know, taken away from being a police officer, and he's been sentenced to more than 200 years in prison, if you can believe that. And, you know, when you listen to it and you actually look at the circumstances of it, there really is some insanity. There is some kind of a lynch mob mentality, and I don't really understand where it comes from. It's really frightful that somehow the public puts pressure kind of on the prosecutors and the government, and they say, come on, we need law and order, things are out of control, which they are. And then the government says, you know, like, we're going to fix everything up. And that reminds me very much of in New York, where the mayor, Rudy Giuliani, was talking about, they called it the broken window policy, that you wouldn't have tolerance for anything. So they stopped the guys that were panhandling, and they stopped guys that were, you know, wiping windows of your cars and asking for money, because that was supposedly like where it started or something. And, you know, this sort of is meant to create law and order and to improve circumstances. And you know, people look at, for example, Paris, which I know, Tom, you love going to France. But, you know, Paris has gotten a reputation as being dangerous. And, you know, the tourism levels have gone down 80%. I don't know if you can imagine how much of a financial loss that is. And, you know, New York and these other places are all tourist places. And so, you know, you want to show that you're being tough on crime. But then you sort of have this aberration, this sort of side effect, that you have something that, you know, someone needed to pull the plug because it didn't make sense. And no one could do that. And in the end, like I said, this is a crazy story, but this officer of Oklahoma ends up getting sentenced to hundreds of years when, you know, any reasonable reading of what happened to him shows you. And by the way, I have it. If anyone wants to email me, I'll forward it to you, the whole story, the narrative. But, I mean, it just doesn't add up. It just doesn't add up. The case is too strange. It does not make sense that he's guilty of what they say he's guilty of. And, you know, I wish, you know, this is something that you've talked about, Tom, when you have some woman talking about how happily married she is and how her husband's so terrific and whatever, you know, this idea that you would, you know, have the husband over a beer. I really would love to sit down with one of these prosecutors over a beer, you know, off the record. See, that's the problem right there. But I'd love to talk off the record and say, you know, this is crazy. What the hell happened here? And they're going to tell me the truth. And the truth is, hey, you know what? We got a call from the governor's office, and they wanted to crack down, and there was a whole thing about corruption and police department, and so we needed to make an example. And this guy was messed up in some ways. Maybe something wasn't exactly right. He should have been off the force, or he should have spent a year in jail for some misdemeanor. But once we started, we couldn't stop. And next thing you know, it was 40, 50 charges. And the next thing you know, there was a jury. And the next thing you know, he was sentenced to 200 years. And that is absolutely unbelievable. And people don't realize how fast this happens. It's shocking. And the thing about this, you know, what I mentioned in the beginning of this hit-and-run guy, you know, there are people that make terrible mistakes, and there are people that make small mistakes. And we talk about domestic violence, and we talk about DUI, and, you know, I think a DUI is a stupid thing. And, you know, I try to help people, you know, get the minimum punishment or whatever and try to straighten their lives out. But, you know, there are a lot of people that are innocent, for real, that are actually put into stupid circumstances that any of us could fall into. See, that's the upsetting thing. I mean, I'm not usually handling classified information, okay? But I am someone who drives on freeways, and I could get into a car accident. And then if I, you know, get out of my car and the other driver is a maniac and he's cursing and screaming and looks like he's going to hurt me, maybe I jump into my car and drive away. I mean, that seems logical. And I don't think that shows any real criminal intent. I don't think that's a hit and run. To me, a hit and run is when you hit like some kid riding a bicycle and you just drive away, or you hit another car and you don't want to, you know, you don't have insurance, you don't have a license, you don't want to deal with it, you drive away. That's a hit and run. But if I'm getting away from the scene of a bad situation and going to the police and making the report for the accident, so I wasn't trying to avoid liability, it's amazing that I'm talking to a prosecutor who's telling me, well, we may have to go to trial on this. And it's like, what are you talking about? Why would you want to do that? And one of the really cruel things, and this is, you know, in terms of our Constitution and dealing with the state, that's the scary thing, because the state has essentially unlimited resources. You know, this prosecutor that I'm dealing with doesn't have any skin in the game. They just don't. You know, they don't care if they do 100 trials. You know, you, on the other hand, have mortgaged your house to pay me and blah, blah, and your life is upside down. This prosecutor is in the courthouse every day anyway. And doing a trial doesn't mean anything to them. And so it's like, hey, we already filed it. We're already doing it. Let's just do it. Let's see what happens. And if they lose, eh, what can you do? Win some, lose some. I mean, they try to win, obviously, but it's not a catastrophe for them either way. And the impact it has on the citizen, on a person, is just the opposite. It's devastating. And so when I'm negotiating and trying to deal with this, it's a very unequal kind of thing. And I'm amazed, to be honest, how honest they have been with me. Where I'm talking to the prosecutor and I'm saying, you know, my guy is innocent. It's crazy. And I expect them to say, bullshit, he's not innocent, and we're going to prosecute him. They will actually say to me, you know, obviously, you know, not in public, but in our little meeting, you know, behind closed doors off the record, yeah, you know, I think your guy is innocent. And I'm like, fabulous. Thank God you've seen the light. Do me a favor. Please drop the charges. Well, I can't. And, you know, it's already too late, and we did this, and I think that is such a terrible, terrible thing that's happened. And what's depressing, and this is the thing where you can't win with the Republicans or the Democrats, is that if anything, it seems like this is actually becoming more so. And that's why I mentioned the Attorney General Sessions. I mean, he actually is at the top of the chain talking about, you know, we got to go for the max on everything. And we got to, you know, have law and order, and we're not going to tolerate anything anymore. And, you know, one of the things they talked about was illegal immigration, but that's only one thing. They're also talking about all the regular offenses. You know, it depends on how you look at it. I mean, personally, I've said before, I think drugs, for example, should be legalized in general, like Portugal has done. Just get people treatment if they need it, you know. But what you talk about, you know, non-violent offenders, and in particular, if you look at who's in prison, there's some real psychopaths that are murderers and rapists, but that's actually a minority. Most of the people in prison are what they call nonviolent, which means that they were involved in drugs. They were involved in for example, smuggling or whatever. Now, these are crimes that are serious, and they're not going to always be nonviolent. It's very possible that if someone tried to steal their drugs, they would have killed the guy. And obviously, you know, children and whoever are hurt by drugs. So I'm not saying it's a wonderful thing. But if you look at nonviolent drug offenders, this is something that the Obama administration was saying, maybe we don't have to go bananas on those guys. Maybe we have to be more careful and more selective. And now that's going to be completely reversed. where they're going to say, now we have to do the max on everybody. And, you know, there just aren't enough prisons in the whole country. We have millions of people in prison. It's unbelievable. And this is something that is pathological. When people that I help a lot of times, you know, that have been charged with things, it's something that happens to them again and again in their lives. That once they start to get into that mentality and they've been in prison and they can't get a job because they have a record and all that stuff, they end up getting into it again. They end up doing other kinds of crimes and so forth. And it really is irrational. And what we've done with marijuana, at least in certain states where we made it legal and started letting the people, you know, have it and not make a big issue of it, I don't think that that has caused so much damage as imprisoning so many people for marijuana charges. And our society has to start thinking a lot more rationally about this, because we don't have the ability to tear ourselves to shreds. And the disrepute, there really is a sense that if a rich person is caught with cocaine, he's going to get away with it. And if a poor person is caught with it, they're going to go to prison. Now, there's one of the Hilton, Baron Hilton or whatever, just got arrested. He's this debutante. What do you call it when it's a man? He's not a debutante. That would be a woman. But he's an heir to the Hilton fortune or whatever, trust fund guy. And, you know, he got arrested now for breaking a restraining order and trying to go into his ex-girlfriend's house. And he's got drug problems and all. And so his family, because they are loaded, put him into rehab. And he's going to get deferral of his sentence. He's not going to go to court for a while. He's going to spend time in rehab. He's going to come out a new man. And he's going to end up dealing with the criminal charge in a very lenient way. Whereas someone who doesn't have, you know, $30,000 a month or whatever to spend on rehab is going to end up going to jail. He's going to end up getting screwed. And instead of dealing with his drug problem, he's going to come out of jail an even more screwed up person, more emotionally and mentally messed up, and that's going to be something that's going to dog him in the rest of his life when he applies to college or tries to get jobs or just in general. He's not going to be able to overcome his drug problem, and it may end up being a lifelong problem. Now, this is just absolutely insane and irrational, and our society is not dealing properly with this, and it's tragic. It's unbelievable, and if anything, what we're seeing now with the conservatives, you know, being more in power now, is that this is actually going to get worse instead of better. So there you go, Tom. Unbelievable, huh?
It certainly is. Let's take a break here. We'll continue with our guest in this bonus hour, criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Your phone call's coming up for Adam. You can dial in right now at 901-3000-TOM. 901-3000-TOM. You can call right now for free legal advice at 901-3000-866.
The entire Tom Likas experience in your pants.
Get the app now.
901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show. From Los Angeles, here we are at 901-3000-TOM. Our guest is criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Your phone calls 901-3000. Tom, what are your questions about? A DUI, a drug bust? Have you been accused of any crimes at all? Adam is here with free legal advice for you. 901-3000-TOM is our number. 901-3000-866. You mentioned the Attorney General Jeff Sessions earlier.
Right.
And among the things we are reading, which you sort of referred to, is that he is encouraging law enforcement agencies, prosecutors, to go after the most serious sentences.
Right.
And here's the thing that I don't understand about that, among other things. Giving everybody the maximum sentence doesn't make you safer, does it? It only
it only
means we're going to spend more on prisons.
I don't know. You know, one of the theories of the criminal justice system is that, you know, people are informed by their fear of punishment. So, I don't know, Tom. You know, do you think that a criminal on the way to doing a crime says, well, I might get 6 years for this, and now it's 8 years, so I'm not going to do it? I mean, I don't know if that makes sense. It's supposed to be the deterrent aspect, and I think that's certainly not true for drugs. I mean, people are, you know, using drugs. Remember you said that, Tom? Like, did anyone say, oh, I really want to use that heroin, but it's illegal, and I might go to jail, and it's hard to find, so I'm not going to do it, you know? I don't know if people really think that way, and they're deterred in that sense. And so when you talk about a law and order thing like Sessions, you know, he's saying that he wants the courts to go for the max from everything. Well, that's certainly going to fill up the jails, and we're going to have to build a lot more, I suppose. But is that actually going to change things? And I'm not so sure if that's true. The other thing that's really tough, like I said, is taking discretion away from judges. I mean, we're seeing how a lot of software is changing the way things are diagnosed with doctors and medical things, and there's legal software, and there's all kinds of things that are going to change where you have computers making decisions. They're supposed to be better than human beings. So maybe we don't need judges anymore. Maybe we get rid of the judge. And we just, you know, look at the crime committed, and there's an automatic number of years that the person gets. But it seems to me that it's good to have a judge and give the judge some discretion to look at, you know, the overall circumstances, that maybe this person has a chance to turn their life around, or someone who's just a loser who's never going to turn their life around. It's a lot different. And that's the thing about mandatory minimums. If you tell the judge that no matter what happens, you got to give the guy at least 6 years, the judge doesn't have the discretion to say, well, this was only a one-off and it's a mistake and I'll give the guy 2 years. You know, he has to give 6 years or more or whatever it is. And that's certainly the direction that we're going in. And if that's going to have an impact on our society, I think in a lot of ways it's going to have a really negative impact. I don't think that spending our tax money on jails, you know, building lots and lots of jails is such a great direction. And the other thing is, you know, people don't get the death penalty for everything. You know, people go to jail for a couple of years and get out, and they're going to be back in society, and they're going to be more messed up than ever, especially if they have emotional problems or they have problems with substance abuse or whatever. Going to jail is actually going to make them probably a lot worse. And, you know, there is some kind of a mentality where there is an appeal that people like to hear that, and they say, you know, yeah, we should get tough on crime. I'm sick of it. You know, I'm sick of this lawlessness. But unfortunately, going for the max and getting tough on crime has other consequences that may be very problematic. And it really, really tends, I think, to emphasize the difference between people that have money and people that don't. And it certainly shows that the people that have money, like we say, are more able to fight and to get, you know, rehab, and the poorer person is going to go to prison and get raped, literally. So I don't see how that's a positive thing.
Did you have any comments about the former sheriff of Los Angeles County, Lee Baca? Oh, he was prosecuted over the way he handled jails in L.A. County, and right. He himself is going to prison.
I mean, isn't that incredible? I don't know what to say. You know, you have these high officials. He definitely interfered with the federal investigation. That's pretty clear. But, you know, Tom, he was offered a very sweet plea deal, and he refused to take it in the end. There was a couple of days when he was maybe going to take it or he wasn't going to take it, and in the end he decided not to. And so he rolled the dice, and he lost, obviously. And it's pretty incredible when you talk about our society for someone to be that high to fall that low, you know. You have Hosni Mubarak, who was the president of Egypt for like 30 or 40 years, absolute authority in the country, respected on the world stage, and now he's spending the last couple of years in prison, you know, for crimes against the people or whatever, and is probably going to die in prison, like, you know, in shame. And it's unbelievable that someone like Lee Baca, who I remember, of course, being the sheriff of Los Angeles, you know, to have been involved in this scandal, and these other officers were involved and their careers are all ruined, and now he's going to spend years in jail, sort of ending his career. He's an older guy, obviously, and he supposedly has all kinds of health problems and dementia and so forth. And it's really sad, you know. They say how the mighty have fallen. In a way, I think what I was saying before is true. I think that goes back to what I said about the justice system, that we'd like to believe that, you know, no one is above the law and that people are going to have equal justice. So even if you have someone like Baca, who, you know, obviously was the sheriff of the whole county, you know, that if he commits crimes, which he apparently did, that he will have to answer for them. And in a way, that's a beautiful thing. But on the other hand, it's so sad to see someone who had really dedicated his life to public service and had reached the pinnacle in the police department of being the main sheriff of the whole department to you know, be able to retire and give lectures or something. Instead, he retires in disgrace, and now he's going to go to prison, the federal prison, for several years. That is just so ridiculous and so sad and so unbelievable. But, you know, when you look at the actual case against him, it really seems like he was crazy, that he did a lot of crazy stuff, and he tried to cover it up, which is always what kills you even worse. And so, you know, it's really sad, but in a way it's justice, so who knows. But I don't know that we always see things like that. We see a lot of strange things where people, you know, go unpunished, or people, you know, get into different circumstances that are unfair to them. And I have to say that I'm dealing on the average end of the criminal justice system, which is regular people like you and me that get in trouble with things. And I have to say that at least half of the cases are absolutely wrong. They're absolute injustices. They're absolutely ridiculous, especially when it deals with domestic stuff, domestic violence and claims of child abuse, and even this nonsense with the hit and run and all these kinds of things. You know, there is such a range. And as I've said, with the fact that you don't have rationality, you have to go to court, and you have to be really careful and protect yourself with an attorney, because the prosecutors and the other people involved are just not making sense. They've gotten so crazy from this kind of thing that they have to protect the public and law and order. And there's a very big issue of, like, you know, kind of what the image is, what it looks like. So if there's a case that has any attention at all, what's it going to look like on the news? How's it going to be written up in the newspaper? And they're hysterical about this stuff, and it really influences how they act and how they think. And then there's sort of the whole, like, you know, subject matter. So if it's, you know, especially, God help you, abuse of a woman, oh my God, you're dead. They're crazy. They break away from all rationality, and they're like, oh, it's violence against women, we have to treat that special. And you've said that, Tom, right? What's the difference between violence and domestic violence? It's violence, right? I mean, why are we hysterical about domestic
violence?
We
already have laws against violence.
We do, don't we? Why is it so much worse if you punch a guy or if you punch a woman who's your girlfriend? It's sick. You're not supposed to punch people. But how come it's 10 times worse when it's your girlfriend? I'm sorry, that doesn't make sense to me.
By the way, does that apply to other things you might do, like setting a fire? If you burn your girlfriend's house down, yeah, is it worse than burning the neighbor's house down?
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, you should always know that, Tom. If you get involved in something with a stranger, right, it's much less significant than if it's your mother or your girlfriend especially, or your wife, God forbid, you know? If you smash her car, I mean, forget it. It takes on a whole new dimension. And, you know, it's not nice to have violence in families, but I don't see why violence against women is considered much more important than violence against men. And there's plenty of violence against men. And even black people carrying on about being killed by police officers and whatever, the truth is most black crime is black on black, where they're killing each other. And that's horrible, too. How come that's any less significant? And why does it make any difference, you know, who the victim was? Was a black man and the officer was black or white or whatever? It's all around terrible. And when you relate to especially the issue of domestic violence, when I'm dealing with a prosecutor and they say, and it was his wife, and she was only 24, it's like, who gives a shit? What's the difference? It's horrible. That's the important thing. Let's look at the crime and deal with it from that point of view. It doesn't have to have this sort of amplification or less emphasis based on who the person was. That's exactly, just as I was saying, that's the opposite of how our system was supposed to function. It's supposed to be just as being blind and the rule of law, you know, not the idea of who you killed and what difference it made and who they were. They were such an upstanding member of the community, or God forbid a child, or God forbid, you know, someone like your wife or a girlfriend. And if it is a child that you killed, God forbid you're the man. If you're the mother of the child, you could be okay. Look what happened to Casey Anthony. You know, you were just depressed. But if you're the father killing your child, oh, see you later, man. And our society is not supposed to function that way. It's becoming more and more dysfunctional because of that influence.
We'll take a break here. We'll continue with our final segment with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Your phone calls, 901-3000-TOM, 901-3000-TOM. When we continue, we'll tell you how you can get in touch with Adam, 901-3000-866.
iHeart, this app, a lot more. Download the Tom Likas app now, 901-3000-TOM. 101-3000 Tom. This is the Tom Likas Show.
The Tom Likas Show. From Los Angeles, here we are, 901-3000 Tom. That's our number. We are here with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. 901-3000-TOM. You can call us right now. 901-3000-866. Adam, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, you can call me toll-free at 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. You can check me out on Facebook or on the World Wide Web at www.adamlawyer.com. And you can send me an email, which I read and answer myself, adam@adamlawyer.com.
901-3000-TOM, that's our telephone number here if you want to talk to Adam in the remaining few minutes here. 901-3000-TOM, dial carefully. 901-3000-866. All right, now, what happens with everybody's marijuana cards? We're in 2018, we're supposed to have recreational marijuana in California. So what happens to the cards?
The cards become irrelevant. If you think about it, there's going to be a whole industry of these doctors that have been writing the prescriptions. I think that's just going to go away. Because if you look at what's going on in Colorado, that's a really good example where it's just literally a free-for-all. So Colorado, you have a store, you go and buy marijuana, you walk in and you buy it. In California, because of the whole licensing and the card and everything, you have to go to a doctor. So when you go to the marijuana store, they have a whole process of filling in an application, showing them the card. They verify that it's real, and only then can you go into the, you know, the sales area or whatever. And I think that that's all going to have to change because it's not going to be like that in California. It's going to just be recreational. So you don't need a card, right, Tom? So, I mean,
well, there is one thing I did read.
Yes.
And that is that the Board of Equalization in California, which went under the radar, declared that if marijuana is legal for recreational use, keep your marijuana card because you will still not have to pay tax on marijuana if you have a prescription for it.
Well, you better believe that the states are not stupid, okay? And they're always looking for sources of revenue. We've seen that with those traffic cameras and all this other nonsense. So if marijuana is this big business that's happening right under their nose, you better believe that they're going to want to tax it. And it certainly is true that if you're using things for medical purposes, for example, when you get prescription drugs, you don't have to pay tax because they're for medical purposes in that respect, and that's something that's exempt. And so maybe you're right. Maybe if you have a marijuana card, it still gives you an advantage because you could buy the marijuana without sales tax, and that could probably save you a lot of money in the long term. I mean, if you're only going once in a while, but if you're going on a regular basis, and every time you're going to be paying a few dollars, it might be worth, you know, for a year to have a marijuana card, which is about $75 or whatever to a doctor, you know, to pay that once and then not have to pay tax on all your purchases. If that's how it goes, Tom, then I would definitely say it's a good idea to get a marijuana card. But this still is a lot of things up in the air and definitely remains to be seen. You know, they definitely cracked down. There used to be a lot more competition. There were a lot of marijuana stores that closed. And it seemed like everyone was going into that business. And so we'll see that only the strong survive. And definitely, as you say, in 2018, when these new laws take effect, it's definitely going to be interesting to see what happens and how the business changes and how the environment changes. And at this point, it's definitely fluid. It's definitely not clear. And it should prove very interesting.
All right, Adam, one more time. How can people get in touch with you?
Call me toll-free at 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320.
Another bonus hour with Adam Sachs. And, of course, you can always drop us a line at tom@blowmeuptom.com.
The entire Tom Likas experience in your pants. Get the app now. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
From the New Normal Newsroom, it's news for guys. I'm Gary Gino.
Yes.
Men are designed to spread their seed.
Yeah.
It's according to Goldie Hawn.
I'd like to spread my seed on her.
I'm going to go ahead and take that as a yes.
Yep, I like her.
On
I
her
like
little
her.
Tiny chest.
Yep, and I like her daughter, too.
You would like to make some deposits.
Sure.
You know, these people have to go through these ridiculous media messes when a movie like this comes out with her and Amy Schumer. And, you know, she gets sit down in front of all these people, hours and hours and hours of interviews, and eventually she says something. And I would imagine there's going to be some pushback from people. She's saying to forgive men for doing this. She has forgiven men who have been, let me get the wording correct here. They have been
over-attentive
when it comes to them, her. So she says, well, that's, you know, they're physically set up to do that. And women need to understand that you just need to, like, maybe back it down a little bit and not freak the fuck out and understand. Men are designed to spread their seed. So when they're, you know, hitting on you over and over again, how about you just cut them a little slack?
Right, because that's called nature.
But, you know, the freaky feminists are going to go nuts over this. It's nature.
Nature.
Right. But you get what I'm saying.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
She's off on these junkets.
Trying to make her feel bad about it.
She's off on these junkets. She's just talking off the top of her head.
She's got to talk to something called Radio Times.
Right, exactly.
Yes. In the world of fuck.
Yeah.
Radio Times.
Taylor Swift is going to court over this guy that grabbed her ass. We've just, you know, we've been on this case from the very beginning, and apparently she's calling an expert to the stand that will say that this guy is likely
likely to
sexually assault women.
Oh my god!
Well, because he grabbed her ass. He's a jackass. He lost his job at KYGO.
Yeah.
David Mueller.
I wonder if the Mules got back up and was in radio somewhere else now.
He sued her in September 2015, claiming that he lost his job as a radio host after she falsely accused him of groping her at a 2013 event. Swift has now responded with a sexual assault and battery suit of her own. This will get underway next month. Right now they're hearing some preliminary stuff. She plans to bring a so-called expert.
Right.
To the stand.
She's got the money to tie this dude up.
This is a guy that apparently will sexually assault people. Don't go. Look, dude, that's the thing. It's the world we live in. You can't just go grab ass.
Of course. I'm certainly not suggesting that.
I was getting that from you. I thought you wanted to give Goldie Hawn some kind of a
Detroit
mustache, which is a very specific thing.
I'm not even saying anything.
Paris Jackson apparently gardening naked. Get to get in touch with nature. We just mentioned it was Naked Gardening Week, I think, last week.
Which is ridiculous.
Paris
but
Jackson,
it's a thing.
Yeah. She's posting, by the way, she's posting nude photos on social media, and they're getting taken down. And she's got a thing about it. She's pissed off. She wants to be nude.
I definitely have
nude.
A thing about her.
Let
she's
her be
hot.
Nude.
She is fucking
her,
hot,
you
man.
You think she got a daddy problem or what?
Great, dude. let me show her the man in the mirror.
Right. I'd give you the opportunity to sing the song, but I got to cut you off. Alan Thicke,
you dick!
In his death,
Alan Thicke
is flipping around in his grave because his wife apparently is looking to cash in on all the dough, and the sons are like, whoa, wait.
Yeah,
a
hold on a second. They signed a prenup in 2005. Yep. Everybody slow down. The sons are going to challenge this whole thing.
They want some of that Thicke money, man.
Right.
Yeah.
And even though one of the Thicks already got the money, the one of them, the
he did lose that lawsuit. I don't know.
Yeah,
how
but that's
much
just
he
one
lost.
Thing.
Yeah,
he just has to give a percentage over it. But come on.
Yeah. Plenty more news for guys.com. And of course, you can find our podcast at GaryandDino.com. From the New Normal Studios in Burbank, we're back to the Tom Likas Show right after this.
This is the New Normal.
You think she got a daddy problem or what?
Great, dude. let me show her the man in the mirror.
Right.
Ha, 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 ha.